Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We're starting our new year with some new guests. We've got some great guests that are coming up on the podcast. If you're new to the podcast, please go back and listen to some of our previous episodes. This is episode 131. And this week, we're happy to have with us Dr. Eric Boyd and Anna Boyd. Eric is a professor and social entrepreneur, and Anna is an executive at the Federal Reserve Board and an executive coach. They've started a nonprofit that's called Fairways to Leadership, which is a nonprofit organization providing leadership development training to college students from diverse communities using the game of golf. And they have some great thoughts to share around our leadership lessons learned in their career. And looking forward to our conversation today with Eric and Anna. Great to have Eric and Anna joining us today, and one's in Florida and one's in the DC area today. So we just talked about, we're not talking about weather in Minneapolis or Orlando or DC, but it's great to have both of you join us today.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Yeah,
thanks.
Absolutely.
It's great to be here.
Well, Anna, could you start off just giving us a little bit of your career story and a little bit of your history?
Absolutely. It's a really a pleasure to be here, Mark. Thank you so much for having us. Well, I often say I am a social worker. My current position is I'm an executive at the Federal Reserve Board, where I oversee community development policy and some research on low and moderate income households across the Federal Reserve System. But I started as a social worker. I was born in San Francisco and grew up there in the 60s and 70s and was very much influenced by the time, by what was going on in it at that time. And so I really wanted to change the world. My first job out of college was with the homeless mentally ill on Skid Row in Los Angeles. And from there, you know, I just kept sort of moving through life, but I wanted to do it at a larger level. I ended up falling into banking at a very interesting time. And at one point I found myself kind of going in a direction that was not in line with my values anymore. I was working for an investment banking firm. Don't know how that happened, but it put me in a position where I could work for the federal government at a really important point. Eric and I met during this time when I was making transitions in my life, and we found a very similar world point of view and ended up moving to Washington, D.C. in the late 90s together. He gave up his job and moved with me across the country for an important job at the Comptroller of the Currency. And so we have had a home here in Washington, D.C. for gosh, since 1997, with a very snowy day that we moved in here. I'll turn it over to you and Eric for the rest of the story. But I'm an executive coach also, and I'm getting ready for a retirement. So
great. Well, Eric, give us a little bit of your story, and it's kind of, I told you before we got started, this first time we've had two people on a podcast together in different locations. So this is gonna be fun today.
Yeah, and so you have a little bit of context for the background of my story. Hearing Anna, they're obviously intertwined closely. From a professional perspective, I've always felt like I was working. I mean, I think my first job was, I was 14 years old and I was working. The Atlanta Braves had a single A ball club in my town. And my job, this is take us back. My job was to sit on left field, and they actually had metal numbers that I would hang on the scoreboard to keep track of the runs and the hits and the errors and everything. And so I started at 14, had been working ever since. Started after college in California, with a job that I didn't realize at the time was going to be very influential, which was as a insurance auditor. And what that entailed was basically I had the responsibility to go around the businesses and do operational audits. So these weren't financial audits where I was looking at the books. I would get tours of the facilities and have to write up how they were actually running their business. And so it was a really fascinating introduction to business coming out of school, because, you know, you kind of moved from what was happening in the classroom to what was happening on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it really sort of helped me develop a real interest in business. And from there, took the sort of a little time out when we moved to DC, like Anna mentioned. But at that time, I'd always had this sort of in the back of my mind going into academics. And so at that time, when we moved, I took the opportunity to go and get my PhD at University of Virginia, and then graduated from there and went to James Madison University. Stayed there for about 15 years in the marketing department. Areas of specialty for me are business-to-business marketing and linking marketing with financial performance. Stayed there for 15 years, retired, so I'm emeritus there, but then came down to University of Central Florida in 2018 to the marketing department, and now I'm heavily involved with the DeVos Sport Business Management Program and teaching there. And as if I didn't have enough to do, Anna and I started this nonprofit, Fairways to Leadership. So now, you know, we're co-founders and president and secretary of that. So yeah, sort of in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, that's great. I'd like to ask a question that we ask almost every guest. If you were knowing what you know now, if you're able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Eric or a 22-year-old Anna, what advice would you give them? And we'll let Anna take that question first, and then Eric, you can follow up.
Okay.
Oh, that's such a great question. I really had to think about this for a minute. I think the most important thing, because there's so many things I would tell my 22-year-old self, but the most important thing is to ask for help. Right? That I have moved pretty quickly up through the executive ranks in federal government. And I often felt like I had to have the right answers. I hung on to a lot of the work for a long, long time. And I didn't ask for help. I think it was later in my career that I really started to lead with questions rather than lead with answers. It took a long time to get there. And at 22, I would say, start with a question, lead with a question. And ask, what do you need? You know, really be grounded in what you need to be successful.
And this was not practice or anything, but I actually had the same similar one on my first that I was going to say. So that sort of tells you how Odd and I tend to think a lot. But I would add to that, if you're going to ask questions in addition to asking for help, I would say, ask such that you can figure out what's important. And that means what's important to yourself, as well as what's important to where you're working. And for example, in academics, right? We basically get evaluated on three things: teaching, research, and service. But there are certain things out of that, for example, research, that tends to sort of stand above the others if you're going to try to progress through to make full. And I see, you know, and I think it's important to sort of know what's important where you are that's going to help you get to advance. Because it's going to be all kind of opportunities and all kind of things that are come your way. But being able to know, okay, that's the thing I need to focus on, right? And it happens also with our students in golf. They're so worried about, you know, how they're going to play and if, you know, and what people are going to think. And we tell them, nobody cares what score you shoot. It's can you keep just pace of play? That's what's really important, right? That you're not holding everybody up. And then once they start to get that, they go, oh, okay, I can do that, right? Because we all get to a hole we need to pick up. But I would say it's just figuring out what's important for you and what's important for you to be able to advance to get to what you want to accomplish.
So talk a little bit about your nonprofits. You started this during COVID. I believe 2020 is when you started, but give us a little bit of the background and kind of your motivation for starting Fairways to Leadership.
Anna, you want to go or?
Yeah, well, I'll kick us off. Yes, it started during COVID. It also started right after the murder of George Floyd, where, you know, we were, like so many people in our country, just so sad and angry and deeply affected by what was going on. And we looked around, here we are in Florida, right, where you could still be outside to a large extent. And we looked around, and Eric thought of his students. He works with a very diverse group of students. UCF is a Hispanic serving institution, and said, you know what, we can invite them to belong. We can invite them to the golf course. And so he invited his students, like not a pro, but said, hey, I played golf for 30 years. I played at many points too, you know, on and off throughout my career. But, you know, he invited them to the golf course, and it turned into something much bigger. They wanted to belong. They wanted to be there. And they kept coming back, and they kept asking for more. And so in the silence and the quiet of COVID, we just started to create also a leadership development program. We kept seeing more and more potential in this. So the golf lessons turned into, here are the rules of golf. Here's how they're grounded in leadership principles. Here's how you create, you know, networking opportunities on the golf course. And it became a social disruption strategy, really grounded in inviting people into an elite sport that is mysterious to many people, out of, you know, this terrible cultural moment. So we're kind of like surprised and overwhelmed and where it all went, but also very excited and leaning into the opportunity of what it's become. Mm-hmm. And Eric can talk about what it's become. It's pretty exciting.
Well, I would just add a few. I mean, I literally, when we made that first invite, I thought, okay, I knew that, you know, from my own research and my own experiences, that being able to play golf got you invited to certain types of corporate events that, you know, was, I mean, there's a reason 90% of CEOs play golf, right? It's a social lubricant, social kind of situation. So I thought, okay, I'll invite you out this Saturday. We'll come out, we'll spend a couple hours, I'll get you going. And that would be it, right? But when we got toward the end, they were like, okay, when are we meeting next week? And they just kept asking, when are we meeting again? But what we realized is that it's, you know, while being able to play the game can allow you to be part of certain, you know, corporate situations or network, it's also important that when you get those opportunities to be able to then perform, you know, if you get leadership out of those. And so that's really, you know, where the leadership part came in. It's like it's more than just, most of the golf programs are just putting a golf club in someone's hand. You know, that's sort of secondary to us. It's about making sure these students who are raising their hand because they don't receive any college credit really are just standing up and saying, I want to do this for myself, to help them be prepared for those leadership situations that we know the game will open up to them. Today, just sort of jumping forward to today, we're active at 4 universities, 2 HBCUs. One is, Anna mentioned, Hispanic serving institution, and one Asian American serving institution, which really fits with our mission, which is to provide leadership development to students, college students specifically, from diverse communities using the game of golf. So, you know, we're excited about it. Like Anna said, we had no idea. It wasn't like we sat down and said, okay, we're going to create this national program. It was just, you know, hey, how can I move the needle, inch the needle just a little bit? And out of that came this, you know, response from the students that just continues to energize us.
And we had talked previously, kind of your goal is to have this program available in every campus across the country.
And exactly, so exactly. To be active at every college and university in the country, because you know, we think it's a valuable skill set, leadership, obviously, but also just the, you know, what the students learn about what's available to them. I mean, you know, it's time and time again, we hear from the students, I never thought this would be available to me. Right. And so to hear them say that, and then to be able to help nudge them towards something that they thought was never available to them is just so gratifying. We just think every student, every college student should have that opportunity. So that's what is the motivation.
So talk a little bit about your leadership development, just some of the things that you are kind of at the core of what you're teaching in the program.
Well, I'll start this one. Basically, from what we've done is we've taken the golf experience and we've broken it into leadership moments. So there's the clubhouse, the practice area, the tee box, the fairway, the green, and the 19th hole. And at each of those leadership moments, we talk about our major leadership traits, right? And those traits would be mindfulness, adaptability, integrity, curiosity, empowerment, and strategy. And so we help them understand you're here on the course not only to play a game, but also to demonstrate and display your leadership and to use that the experience of golf to help you develop that. But for our students especially, there's also a social fabric to it. And I don't know, Anand, maybe you want to speak directly to that's really important for our students.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's one story that comes to mind that was realized here over the holiday break as well. So one of our students is an engineering student. She's a young woman, Mexican. She'll be running the world one day. She's just incredible. And she challenged her father, right? Her father was talking about, going out, playing golf, but yeah, well, first time I'll take you out. You finally learned kind of a thing. And she challenged him and said, well, aren't there other women in your engineering firm that play golf? And why haven't you ever invited them? And so the next thing you know, right, she's out on the golf course playing golf with her father's friends, including a woman and another woman. And so it was just really something that's the realization of this, right, is teach young people to access, this fairly elite sport and empower them to ask those kinds of questions. So the leadership principles allow them to think beyond just putting a club in your hand. I mean, we are by no means trying to make great golfers. We're trying to make, and we love these students. Like sometimes you see them out there and like, oh, you played baseball. Yeah, I see you going after the ball that way. And it's so endearing, right? But we're not trying to make them great golfers. We're trying to put them in situations where they can be successful socially. And the leadership principles just support all of that. And the stories we hear, I mean, really the interesting thing about young women in particular being invited by their brothers and their fathers and their uncles to finally play. Like it's that to me is just deeply fascinating. We have two daughters and Eric went out of his way to teach them both. We did family golf. One of our daughters
just did it over the holidays.
Yeah, we did it over the holidays too. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. But, we taught them that they should be there, that they were allowed to be there. And we taught them the competence of what it feels like to be there.
And I would just add one more story, because I think the students tell the story better than we can. A situation that we hope to be able to remove with our effort is there was a young woman who was in the finance field and she was working in an office with four people, two male colleagues and then the male manager. And when it came to get their annual reviews, the two male colleagues got their annual review over 4.5 hours on the golf course with the manager. She got 30 minutes behind a closed door, and it's because she didn't play golf. And it's that access, right? It's that opportunity to get the same opportunity that others get. And we're not saying that this is going to solve all the problems, but we do think it helps move crack a door open for many of our students, not only professionally, but to Anna's point, in the home. And that's what's really surprised us in the home. Of how so many of our female students have said, yeah, my dad plays and my brothers play. I tried it maybe when I was 5, I didn't like it, and then never came back to it. But now I see it as a way for me to spend more quality time with them.
So as you're as you're looking at kind of the core of what you're teaching your people that are part of the program, are there any books that you recommend to them as far as that helps them in leadership, or that you recommend to other leaders?
Oh, well, I can tell you what I've been reading lately that I've absolutely, I know Eric has read, I think, every single book on golf that there is. The books in our house are epic. I have a more eclectic and sort of far-reaching kind of perspective. So the book I've been reading lately that I absolutely loved is My Life in Full. Indra Nooyi's story, her memoir of, she was the former CEO of PepsiCo. She was in that role for a very long time. It is the story of a woman of color really ascending to greatness, how she was able to do that. And her, it's a very, very honest perspective about what it took, the sacrifices that she made, how she prioritized her life. And that's really what leadership is all about, right? How do you prioritize? What do you prioritize? How do you decide to spend your time and to give your attention? And that's a fabulous, fabulous book. The other book that I often recommend as a basic leadership tool is A Lincoln on Leadership. It's an old book, and you know, quotes a lot from his life and times, right? Really of somebody who was in such a traumatic time in our history. And a lot of that relates to kind of what we're going through today in many ways as well.
I would say for mine, I'll give you my examples of books, but more importantly is the types of books that I would push people to look for. And so, for example, one type of book I think is important is a book that helps you experience something beyond the world you're in right now. And so for me, growing up, for example, I was a big fan of the Tarzan series by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And I grew up in a small town, but that book helped me sort of think there's something beyond here, right? There's something different than what I'm in right now. So finding a book that helps you put yourself in a different situation, I think, is important. The second type of book I would look for is a book that helps, and this goes back to what Anna mentioned to begin with, helps you be able and have the confidence to ask questions. And for me, that book was Plato's Republic. And I remember reading that and going, okay, I need to ask questions, right? I don't want to make sure I'm just seeing the images on the wall from the shadows from the fire. I want to know the answers. And then the third book I would say is a book that helps you deal with something that you're currently facing. And so like for me, and Anna can attest to this, it's like, how do you take something that starts on one Saturday and make it something that's in every college and university in the country? And so the book that has helped me think about this is a book called Golf's Driving Force, which is a story of Dean Beeman's growth of the PGA Tour, and how they broke from the PGA and then grew that tour to what it is today. So those would be the three kinds of books that I would sort of push people to look for.
Any quotes that are favorites of yours that you refer to?
For me, I know laugh when I use this person's name, but for a time there, I was reading a lot of Tony Robbins. And one of the quotes that he has that I think is so true, and I think it rings true also with Fairways of Leadership and our networking focus, is people are your greatest resource. That's a quote. And so I think it's just so true. It life in the end comes down to the people around you and help, you know, that can help you. And they're the thing, they're what's going to be able to help you find success.
The one that I often think about, and it's a little cliche, but Gandhi's quote around, be the change you want to see in the world. That's how we've tried to live. Mm-hmm. We hope we have affected other people positively.
So I have to ask this question, favorite golf course? And the follow-up is, what course haven't you played that you want to play?
Well, I'll tell you one, a course that I had the absolute privilege to play. I happened to be working for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute at the time. And I got to play congressional here right before Tiger Woods tournament. They invited the media and some nonprofits and, you know, different folks. And it was just, it's a fantastic course. It was the first time I'd ever been out with a caddy, and he helped me so much. And I parred a couple of holes, you know, even like playing with a man. And I was, at the time, I'd had a lot of lessons and I was playing golf a lot more often. And wow, it was just a fantastic experience. It was also a stark experience in terms of the racial makeup of the place. When we drove up, there was a line of people to take your golf clubs, you know, who were all mostly Black men. You know, the people working the course, taking care of the course, were largely Hispanic. And then you got to the clubhouse and everybody was white. And there was about a handful of women. So this is an ongoing problem for the golf industry. And we hope we're making a small difference in all of this.
I would say my favorite course I've played so far is North Berwick, just outside of Edinburgh in Scotland. It's sort of a tie for me for the two courses I really want to play. One is St. Andrews and the other is Pebble Beach. So those would be the two. Both seaside courses, but very different layouts.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody I've talked to that's played in Scotland said it's a different game. Their courses are completely different. So what do you do besides golf to recharge? I'm guessing that's part of your recharging is getting on the golf course. Anything else that you enjoy doing?
For me, yoga is a really important physical recharging for me. I also have, during the pandemic, rediscovered a deep, deep love of poetry. And I spend a lot of time thinking about poetry. I started to write some of my own work again, and I'm just really enjoying that. But the silence, the peace of it, the stillness that it brings.
That's interesting. I feel very much like what I do charges me. So it stretches me for sure, because there's so many things going on, but I just find so much fulfillment in all of them. I don't necessarily like, you know, the golf. I mean, obviously, you know, I enjoy playing that, but I also like doing, my academic work and the research and the writing, the working with students. I guess if I had to choose one thing, I have recently started to do more meditation. And I do find that helpful to as part of the day, to sort of take that moment to sort of come out of the mind and into the body for a few moments.
So any parting advice that you would give a new or up and coming leader?
I would say work smarter, not harder. That's sort of what I think.
I would say listen to your team. Listen to the needs of your team. Right now in particular, your employees make you. You know, the team that you have around you make your leadership. It's not about you. It's about the environment that you create. And I think we're seeing that in ways today that we haven't seen for, you know, decades. The sense that employees want, they want an environment where they feel respected and where they feel, you know, a sense of belonging. And a leader creates that environment, a good leader.
What? How would someone learn more about Fairways to Leadership, and how can people get involved? I'm sure you're looking for corporate sponsorship. You already have that, as well as people that would donate time and energy and helping get this in more universities and colleges around the country.
I would say definitely, you know, check out our website, www.fairwaystoleadership.org. As far as, and we also are on all the social platforms, same Fairways to Leadership on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, also on Instagram. So that's where we regularly are posting, you know, pictures, feedback, comments, experiences of students. I would say as far as getting involved, As I mentioned, you know, we have national aspirations. We're 4 universities now. We're hoping to continue to possibly try to double that regularly to be able to get to that ultimate goal. It really depends on the level the person, you know, or the organization wants to come in. You know, there can be a specific university that they would like to help us be able to enter into. So helping us, you know, make introductions and supporting that, you know, with time and treasure would be great. But if you're also interested in a larger sort of founding partner who can help us grow internationally, not internationally, but, well, hopefully maybe internationally, but nationally, that would be welcomed, you know, also. But, you know, there are also smaller ways. We have an executive forum, which is a speaker series. So if someone might be interested in speaking to our students about their leadership experiences and how golf maybe has contributed to that. But we also have corporate sponsors who look to use the relationship to create a pipeline of diverse talent. Because our students are college students, both undergraduate and graduate. And so we've had corporate sponsors who have used the opportunity to be able to network and recruit. Because, you know, in the end, I mean, these students are really the hand raisers, right? As I mentioned earlier, they don't get credit for this. This is something they do on their own. So these are students who are saying, I want to be a leader. I want to be challenged. And so a lot of our corporate sponsors see this as a way for them to be able to recruit, you know, students who, you know, they may not have been able to get access to before and get more of a high touch type of experience.
Well, it's been great to have this conversation with you, and wish you continued success with all that you're doing, and especially with Fairways to Leadership. I encourage everybody to check out the website, and if there's interest, definitely reach out and connect to see how you might be of help. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.